welcome to Recurring Nightmares, episode 55. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
And on this episode, what Jaws did for the water, these movies did for making friends. We are going to discuss Speak No Evil and its 2024 remake. But first, as always, and I should mention, just I should do this when we talk about newer movies. This is like a spoiler podcast, so we talk about the full movies. If you haven't seen them, you don't want to know what happens, come back later.
Yeah, go watch them and then come back.
And you know, in these particular movies, don't get mad at me if you watch them. They're a little rough, but I liked it. We'll get into it, but first, as always, we talk about what we've been watching. So what have you been up to, Chris?
Not much, especially like in the way of films. The only movies I watched were the ones we watched for this, which is very weird for me. I watched Terrifier 3. We talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had not seen another movie until I watched Speak No Evil 2024. So it was a bit, but I did watch a couple others. I've been like in a weird spot where I just can't kind of focus on much. I've caught some like TV stuff. One, there was a documentary that came out end of September on Netflix. It's a documentary series called Mr. McMahon.
Oh yeah. I haven't watched this. I've heard a bit about it.
Yeah. So documentary on Vince McMahon. You can see that, like, when this was started, that they were going for like a different vibe. I think like this was before the allegations had come out, and like, I mean, there's always been like allegations about McMahon, but he's kind of always skirted by them up until this last round where he basically had to like vacate his seat and as head of his company, and then he ultimately sold it to Endeavor, who was in charge of the UFC, and he's no longer associated with WWE, I think, at this point, because of the allegations that have come out about him.
He might get a cabinet spot, though.
His wife was just appointed or named to be the head of the Department of Education, which she has zero qualifications for, mind you. Vince McMahon is kind of a shitty human, and this, though, was like, I think originally kind of painting it out like, hey, look at this guy who, you know, he built this big multi-billion-dollar company. You know, basically, he's a carnival barker. Like,
and they have his participation, right? Like, it was not a hit job. It was just like...
Yeah, he is involved in this for five of the six episodes. Like, they have him sitting down. They are asking him questions, you know, going over his history, you know, from early childhood up through then, which I think he's like 70-something in this documentary series. And then the allegations came out while they were filming this, and he ceased all participation from that point forward. And the last episode of this kind of gets into that. But previous to that, it's actually, I think, pretty soft on him. Like, it does kind of say, like, you know, he's made some choices. They talk about the scandals. There was the steroid scandal back in the 80s, where Hulk Hogan famously, like, was called as a to testify for the prosecution. And he participated, but he ultimately did not sell out McMahon. There is, you know, he squashed a labor. Jesse Ventura was trying to organize the wrestlers into forming a union, and he basically squashed that. So, like, there's, you know, unsavory stuff that he has done over the years. And they touch on that, but it's not like, you know, it's not in a negative light. Like, they don't paint him in an overall negative light. It's kind of like, these are the things that is going on. In fact, it's very favorable towards him in a lot of it, I think. And the allegations came out, and they kind of have to touch on that. I think if you don't know anything about Vince McMahon or the history of WWF, WWE, probably good, like, at that. But if you know any of it, like, I think five episodes of this, like, I knew almost every story they told.
All
the details are there. It's an interesting retrospective on the history of professional wrestling from the, like, early 80s through what it is now, which is just like this mega corporation that came from very humble beginnings, and you just see how, like, Vince McMahon's plan was to just gobble up everything and become the superpower in the industry, which he has not had success outside of that industry in anything. He started the XFL, that went up twice. He's had WWE movies, which didn't do a whole lot for him. He's not been successful outside of the wrestling ring. And it is very funny because he keeps going, "Oh, well, the character I play it's just a character." And every single person they interview, like, that is not him, is like, even his kids are like, "Yeah, that's him." Like, it's an amped up version of him, but it's him. Like, he is that guy that you see on TV, which is often an asshole and a misogynist, and he intimates sexual assault sometimes on the show. Like, in the past, he has done that, and, like, this all, like, plays out, and you're like, yeah, I could see, like, that all translating to real life. And he's like, "No, that's not me. Like, that's a character I play on TV." And everybody else is like, "Yeah, no, that's him." That's a funny thing I thought that came out of this, was that everybody was like, including his children, were like, "Yeah, Mr. McMahon is Vince McMahon, the man." Like, it's, but yeah, I think if you know anything about wrestling or the history of WWE, it's maybe not worth a watch. It is broken up into, like, six episodes that are, like, 50 minutes a piece, so it's digestible in that.
If you're not in the wrestling, though, do you think it would be an interesting watch?
I think it's interesting to, like, see who this guy is. Like,
yeah, okay.
He is a guy that he tries to paint himself as, like, this self-made guy, and when you read between the lines, is he's a lot like other billionaires in that his dad was rich, and his dad gave him the opportunity to, like he painted as, like, "Well, my dad sold me the company, but, like, I had to pay him for it, and I didn't have the money." And so, but, like, yeah, your dad sold you the company that was already successful and told you, "You need to pay me this money," knowing full well that you were going to make that money. As long as you didn't fuck it up in the 6 months that you had it, like, you were going to make the payments.
Yeah.
And, like, normal people don't get those opportunities. Like, I think it's an interesting look at a billionaire.
That's something we'll touch on in one of the movies I saw. Yeah, but
so yeah, I saw that. It's fine if you're any interest in a sociopath. And I watched a pair of other things. New Year. Kind of, I mean, we're in November now, but, like, new TV has started, and nothing much really caught my eye. Recently I kind of, like, been in a weird spot where I just kind of want some noise while I'm working, and I've been turning on this show called Dr. Odyssey. I don't know if you heard about this one.
No.
So it's Joshua Jackson, who I believe was on Dawson's Creek, I think.
Oh, wait, maybe I have heard of this. Just, I knew he had a new show.
Yeah, so he is, he's probably most famous for Dawson's Creek. He played a guy named Pacey. I never saw that show, but, you know, 20 years ago.
He used to be in movies and stuff, too.
Yeah, a couple horror films, I believe.
Yeah.
But he is the lead of this show, that where he is a doctor
on a cruise ship.
Yes. So I thought that was an interesting concept, like, in itself. It's like, oh, it's going to be, like, medical mystery of the week. No, it's a straight up soap opera. Like, everybody on this show is horny and fucking each other.
It's like a kind of a Grey's Anatomy or something like that.
Yeah, like I was hoping more for like a House.
Yeah,
like where it's that this is not that, but Philippa Sue, who if you saw Hamilton, the Disney Plus version of it, she plays what's his name's wife in that. And
Desdemona or something. Yeah,
she plays Eliza Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton's wife in that, and I found her like fascinating in that. I think she has a great voice, and I find her quite attractive. So like I'm watching it to like just watch her be horny on screen. It's dumb. It's really fucking dumb, but it's kind of been what I needed right now.
And now you're sucked into the soap opera. They got you for fucking life. Yeah,
it's wild though, because normally like these shows, like they like try to build up the sexual tension between the leads, and are like, all right, we're gonna like, it's always gonna be a question of like when, like, you know, X-Files, right? When will Skulder and Mulder, Mulder and Scully fuck? Like, three episodes into this, like he is screwing his subordinate. And then five episodes in, or six, might be the episode after Halloween, he's having a threesome with her and his other subordinate. Like,
what is the Zod?
It's ABC. Like,
so is that like R rated though? Or?
No, it's not. Like, there's no like nudity. It's just anything. Like, okay, just, yeah, it's just everybody's fucking horny.
Yeah.
It's goofy. The medical emergencies are dumb. Like, everybody's getting venereal diseases, which I do think is kind of funny, and probably would be accurate to a cruise ship. Like, they probably do get a lot of like weird venereal diseases and other shit. And then they try and spice it up with like, oh, like this person may have smallpox or something. And it's like, it's never that, but they try to like, you know, do the diagnosis that makes it interesting. It's super dumb, but I am like hooked in enough to be like, I'm gonna watch this as like background noise. And finally, other one is also another ABC show, but does hit that kind of procedural thing that I was looking for. It's called High Potential. She's a cleaning lady at the start of it, but she has like this thing where she's just really fucking smart. And she can like look at stuff and figure stuff out. So, basically she's Sherlock Holmes, and the police department like hires her as a consultant. And, but she's like super trashy, always dressed like super inappropriately, going into crime scenes, like wearing a fur coat, and she looks absurd. And I'm finding like it's like mystery of the week shit. And it's like just kind of what I need right now, just like not anything super heavy. Like it is all murder and shit, but like, she's solving the crime, so
don't worry, I brought you some heavy stuff.
Yeah you did, so.
Doesn't get much heavier than what we're gonna do tonight, but
that's all I've been up to. I wanted to get out and see Heretic. I had multiple times. I like had tickets through A-List and I canceled them. I just did not want to go to the theater. So,
I want to see that too. But is that your last one?
Yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
I wanted to see Heretic, but the week that I would have been able to go, our theater actually got a Nora, which I'm sure you've probably seen the trailer for.
Mm.
And it's a movie that I wanted to see very badly because it's directed by Sean Baker, who I don't think you've seen any of his movies, Chris.
I don't believe so.
He did The Florida Project. And
Yep. You told me about that. It's one I have on my list. I just haven't gotten to yet.
If you're going to check him out, that's the one I would recommend because I think it's his best. Okay. I still think it's his best. But he also did couple years ago, Rocket,
the porn one, right? Well,
yeah,
porn, but the guy was like a porn star.
The guy's a porn star, and actually, I saw someone talking about that this week, about how it's kind of a commentary on the Trump era. It's about a charlatan that rolls into town and fools people. Him, you know, this porn star basically being the charlatan.
Right.
But Sean Baker makes movies about sex workers.
Okay.
Which, at least every single movie I've seen of his is about sex workers in some way. The porn star, Florida Project, the mom is a sex worker. I think he's in an interesting lane in that he makes movies about people that don't get movies made about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think he's really, like, that's one thing that's cool, but like, I think he's just really good. Like, he's really, he's got a really strong sense of like specificity. Like, he seems like he knows these worlds. Like, he knows like what these people would be like. And I think he's a pretty strong like storyteller and strong director. Like, and I think he really steps it up here. Again, I don't think this is as good as the Florida Project, but the premise here is Mikey Madison, who she was in the recent Scream movies.
Okay.
She was the girl who gets lit on fire in, I think, Scream as well as Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
She just likes getting lit on fire.
She has like this crazy energy in anything I've seen her in, and she gets lit on fire. And this is her first leading role, and she plays a stripper / sex worker who meets this rich kid. Like, you know, he's like 20 something.
Mm-hmm.
Who like a kind of romance forms between them because she could speak Russian and he's Russian. And what you think you are getting in this movie is like Pretty Woman, like an update on Pretty Woman, kind of like this fairy tale about a woman who like escapes her life to something better. And that's right. Like kind of what you get for like the first hour. And then it takes a turn. It turns into like this one crazy night movie, and it's very funny at parts, but it's also like really, really awful when you think about what is happening to her. This is kind of stolen from a film cast conversation about this, but like what Sean Baker does, the thesis running through his movies is that the American dream is a lie. If you are born in poverty or working class, you are never moving out of that status into a different class. And that's, once again, what this movie really touches on. Her performance is incredible. I think she'll be up for Oscar. I think she'll get a nomination. And the movie pulls off a really cool magic trick, which is like, you think it's like this fairy tale romance thing until you realize, oh no, it is definitely fucking not. And the whole second half of the movie is just like kind of insanity, like kind of like this like Uncut Gems level of menace and insanity. But it's also secretly doing a different love story in the second half. So when you reach the end, you're like, I actually have been watching a love story, I think. I don't want to say much more than that because it's spoilery. I think it's well worth checking out because I think you would like it. I really think, though, like, if you just want to check out what Sean Baker's all about, I think there's no better starting point than The Florida Project. But I haven't seen a movie by him I don't like. I think he's really one of the best directors going.
Cool. I did see the trailer for this, like, looking through the footage on IMDb. And the way the trailer did paint it out was like, she marries this Russian oligarch rich kid, and the parents come, or the dad comes to New York or wherever they're at to like break them up.
Yep.
That's kind of how the trailer ends. So
yes. And that is like what I remembered of the trailer is I knew there was something up with his parents. I don't know if they're mob or what. And then like, I was like, yeah, something like, they're going to come try to stop their relationship. The trailer is pretty good about not giving away how that plays out, but I'll let you see it. You should definitely see it, but it does turn into like a crazy, like one night adventure of cool. just pure insanity.
Yeah, I am interested in it.
Big recommend. But again, check out Florida Project.
Okay.
And I only have like two other things too. It was a light month for me as well. Just not a lot out there. But I got a chance to watch something over the weekend, Chris. Did you see this? It was, I think on Netflix, an event on Netflix.
Oh yeah. Yes. They, are you talking about, the boxing match?
Yes.
Yeah, I did. Well, I tried.
You were part of this. Okay. Did you actually get to see any of the fight?
Some, not much, but some.
Okay. I think, you know, obviously we have to touch on the obvious here, which it was plagued by server problems, I guess. Like it was like almost impossible to fucking watch this thing. And when you would get through, it would be like really, you know, buffering really bad. It like looked like shit. Like it actually took you back to the 90s a little bit. And that's
it's like, oh, everything's blurry.
Yeah. I think it was awful. I think like,
yeah, it's a joke.
When it did come through, it was just like people who had no business commentating on what was going on. You had people who, like, I guess would, but, like, their brains are no longer functioning. Like, Evander Holyfield's fucking brains were, like, leaking out of his ear as he was trying to talk. It was just a bad spectacle all around, I thought.
Yeah.
Jake Paul, when he won, gave a very Trumpy, like, coded speech about how, like, America's going to be great again now, and it's entering the era of truth, and really just awful feeling all around to it. I think the whole thing, from a production standpoint to what the content of it was almost like emblematic of like an era that we're heading into. It's just like, this is it. We've reached idiocracy.
Where we are multi-million dollar, 70,000 seat stadium to watch a 27-year-old fight a nearly 60-year-old man.
Yes.
And like, I can't, like, I watched it too, just like you did. And it was like, I watched it hoping somehow that this 60-year-old man was going to beat the fuck out of this kid.
I mean, I think that's pretty much everyone. I think that's like,
yeah,
that was why it got the viewership it did, because, you know, Jake Paul's a fucking annoying dickbag. But like, the reality to the fight itself, I am probably the only person I've seen that like came away from it being like, I don't know, man, that's kind of inspiring that he fucking, a guy that old was able to go the whole fucking way. Like, and it did to me seem like they were trying to fight. Like, again, I am no expert on boxing, so I, you know, maybe they were just dancing around and fucking around, but it did seem to me like they were both trying. And just the fact that Tyson at his age was able to, like, dude, you go try to fight someone for 2 minutes, you're going to be tired 30 seconds in.
Oh, absolutely. Like, no shade at Tyson. I do think that like the last few rounds, like, Mike looked tired after like the third round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he just, you know, I mean, as you would be, right? You're trying to bounce around. You're like, and you're 60 years old. Like, he's not, he hasn't fought in 20 years.
Yes,
like the last
yes.
time he fought was when he was 38 years old.
Yeah.
I mean, the last time, I guess, a real sanctioned fight, I guess he fought during COVID, an exhibition match or something in an empty arena. But regardless, like, the last real match he had was 20 years ago. And he looked tired after like round three or four. And it did look a little bit like Paul would throw punches at him, but like, I've seen that guy throw harder punches. It did look like he was pulling back a little bit on him.
You think so? I couldn't tell.
He was in a lose-lose situation, right? If, you know, either Mike knocks you out or you knock a 60-year-old man out. And if you knock a 60-year-old man out, you look like an asshole. Like, everyone thinks you already are one anyway. I don't know. I did not find it entertaining. It is a little bit inspiring that, like, especially after, you know, Tyson had a a medical emergency in June.
Yeah.
Or May, like, where he almost died. Like, you know, for him to be able to get, you know, fit to the point where doctors are like, yeah, you can go into that ring. And he had to be cleared by, like, the Texas State Medical Board.
Yeah.
To be able to fight. Yeah, that's, like, super impressive.
And it was clear, like, even, like, the people commentating were, like, very early on his legs were bothering him. And they kept saying, oh, yeah, his legs look bad, his legs look bad. And I don't know. At 58, my legs are probably going to be bad. And I was just like, at least he fucking... Like, the thing is, like you said, you could see he was tired, like, or, yeah, like, you know, really struggling, but he fucking kept going. So, like,
yeah,
there is that element to it. And I was, for as awful as the whole thing is, I was on the edge of my seat throughout it because there were moments when he threw a punch, you're like, dude, if that lands.
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, that's the thing. All you need is one good, you need one good, you know, connection, and he would have fucking, he could have knocked him out still. Like, he still had that power, I thought. It just, you know, he just couldn't get in close enough. And, yeah, I don't know. The whole thing is like a debacle, though. Like, just really icky feeling.
Yeah, like, one, I absolutely hate Jake Paul.
Yeah,
like,
me too.
Like, he just irks me. And his brother. His brother as well, a little bit less so than him, but
what's his brother's name?
Logan Paul.
Logan Paul, yeah.
Like, they're both, you know, shitbag influencers and content mm-hmm. creators.
Yeah, fuck them.
And yeah, like I don't like either one of them really, but Jake Paul really gets on my nerves. But regardless of any of that, I think this. Like, Netflix best beef their shit up, because this coming up, like,
yeah, Christmas time, Day, football, right? Football
games, yeah.
And, I want to be able to watch football on Christmas, goddamn.
Yeah, yeah, I want to be able to watch the games they have on tap, and also in the new year, like, they've signed on. You know, part of the reason Netflix had that Mr. McMahon documentary and not another service was because they're using it as, like, kind of a jumping on point for Netflix people, because they signed the WWE contract. So, like,
oh, really?
They're going to be broadcasting live once a week, WWE Raw.
I thought, like, Peacock had that.
Peacock does. That but contract's over.
Okay, gotcha.
And yeah, starting in January, Netflix will have Raw, and I believe the pay-per-view stuff as well. So, like, they're gonna, like, and I'm not saying, like, this probably was the biggest stress test for it, because everybody tried to tune in to watch this fight, but yeah, football is going to be hard, and if it doesn't work, the NFL is going to be really pissed off.
I think they'll figure it out hopefully by then, but I just don't know how they blew this. Like, you knew it was going to be big, like, people were going to show up and watch it for sure. And it was debacle. Like, outside of the fact of, like, how awful the whole thing is, like, it was awful on top of awful.
Yeah. Just bad technical presentation, bad production too. Like, just, like,
dude, just weird, terrible. Yeah.
Weird way of doing things. But,
that was that. I just have one more thing before we get into Speak No Evil, which I know you're super excited about. The Penguin wrapped up since our last episode, and I think that show was excellent. Like, it, in my opinion, stuck the landing and then some, and I think most people are kind of in my boat. Most people found it very entertaining. The last episode, I think, is great. Like, it's just really, really good. Incredibly dark. Like, I was kind of shocked how dark they went with the last episode. Say anything about that without spoilers, but anyone who's seen it knows what I'm talking about. Although the funny thing is, like, most people I talk to who have seen the show they point to one thing that happens like 5 minutes before the end of the episode that's really dark, and I'm like, yeah, but did you see the scene after that? Because that was even darker, dude. Like, they went something even crazier. Everyone's like, oh, yeah. Like, yeah. One thing I want to say about it, this is not really giving anything away, but the comparisons to Sopranos, one of it mainly comes from like, hey, we're doing a mob show.
Yeah.
But part of it is like very early on, in like the first episode, I think most people who've seen The Sopranos would notice that he's got mom issues. And that is a big part of The Sopranos, especially season one, is that like his mom, Tony Soprano's mom, is like, she's the one who fucked him up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you get vibes of that throughout this. You're like, oh, they're just copying that. But by the end, you realize this is the inverse of that, and that she's not the one who made Penguin the way he is. He's the one that made his mom the way she is. And it's just,
oh,
like, he's always been a fucking little piece of shit. It's like from a little boy. It's pretty cool. Yeah, dude, this is a huge recommend. And like, I really hope that this place, like, this is kind of like a bridge into the next Batman movie. Because I think it bounces off the first Batman movie so good, except for the fact you're like, where the fuck is Batman, dude? Like, shit is going down in this city, and there's not even a fucking mention of him through the whole thing. You're like, dude, where is this guy? But like, yeah, I think like they set up, I think like Penguin should be like the villain of the second one, honestly, like the way they set him up here. But I guess we'll see. It's still a long ways off, but really, really entertaining show.
Nice. Yeah, it's one I want to get to, but it was like, I don't know if I could focus on like 8 episodes or whatever it was.
I think it's, I think it's 8. Yeah. It's really good. Good. The first episode's very fun, so I'd say give it a shot.
All right.
You ready to talk about these movies?
Yeah. Okay. As ready as I'm gonna be. So.
So we're doing Speak No Evil and its remake. We're gonna start with Speak No Evil from 2022.
This is my husband, Ben.
Patrick Feld. This is my wife, Kira.
This is Agnes.
Aunt has some trouble communicating. He can be a bit insecure.
Nice Vespa.
Yeah, isn't she?
You should try.
Can we?
I won't call the fun police if you don't.
Okay. Back
before I quit my practice.
You're a lawyer.
Doctor, listen, you have to come and visit.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Done.
It's so quiet around here. I don't even have any neighbors.
Hey, you made it.
Welcome.
Ta-da!
You are VIP guests.
Just to remind you, I'm a vegetarian.
Our gift to you.
That is so... I'm...
Louise, doctor's orders.
Very good.
Settle in. I promise you guys, it could be a great weekend.
How long's it been?
17 years.
17 years. Wow.
You get less for murder.
Something's not right with him.
He has a condition. It makes it hard for him to communicate.
Sometimes it's okay to think things, but you can't actually see them.
Oh, no.
Thank God there's a doctor in the house.
I'm not a doctor.
What?
But didn't you say you were a doctor?
Did I?
Yeah.
Look at their faces.
Of course I'm a bloody doctor. Agnes, why don't you and Aunt show us the dance that you've been working on?
I've been married a long time ago. Where did you come from? Where did you go?
Aunt, what is wrong with you? Just feel the rhythm in your feet. Like 1, 2, 3, 4.
This is the one.
No!
What is wrong with you?
I want to pack up the car and I want to leave right now.
Would you
you're sad to see go.
Are you gonna go out there and be completely normal?
I've been pretending it's normal since we got here. Dad?
Remember that time you guys came to stay? You flipped out and tried to leave without saying goodbye?
It's I think it's a Danish film?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah, and our main couple is Danish, and they meet this Dutch couple. But anyways, it is directed by Christian Taftrup, written by him, and I think his brother Mads Taftrup. It got some sort of release in theaters. It had about a $3 million budget and box office of like $377,000. But in America, this was like a big Shudder original, so I think that explains some of the low box office. And I don't know any of the actors here, so I'm not going to refer to the actors. I don't think anyone really knows the actors. And to make it easy in terms of like the character names, I'll just be like the good dad, the bad dad.
Yeah.
If that helps our conversation about this. But basically, it's about a good couple, the Danish couple, who they're on vacation, I think, in Italy, in the original as well, right?
Tuscany, I believe they say.
They meet the bad couple, the Dutch couple, and, you know, kind of hit it off with them. And after their vacation, who knows how long after, they get invited to go spend a weekend at their you know, farmhouse or whatever. And what these movies are, I think the general concept for both of these movies is just like super, super fun. Like, until it's not fun. But the idea is that the host family is constantly making them feel uncomfortable. Like, it's a series of like these microaggressions against them to where like you're super uncomfortable, but you're like, do I want to say something? And like, you know, like maybe I'm the one that's like reading into this wrong, or maybe I'm the one that's being prudish, or
they're the host. And maybe like, maybe I exactly that. Like maybe I'm being prudish. Maybe I'm overthinking it. And so you just kind of let things happen.
But it is like a deliberate plan by the bad couple to fuck with them, like to test their limits and stuff. And so like they're like the bad husband, he is like, he's very charismatic and kind of like a free spirit and seems to kind of know a lot about things. And he's supposedly a doctor, right? Like,
yeah,
it's this thing where someone is making you uncomfortable, but they're also like the person that you kind of want to be around at the party. They're charismatic like that. And to me, this whole brew is like hitting a nerve that I don't think I've seen in a horror movie. To me, it's almost like the first, you know, hour and a half of both of these movies kind of play like a comedy of manners. It's like a very like dark comedy where you're like, oh man, I don't know. Like, and then it just fucking goes crazy fucking dark. Especially in this original film. So anyways, they go, like, I'll touch on some of the things that happened that I think were big scenes, and the remake apparently thought were big scenes too, because fucking the remake does most of the, you know. Yeah,
there's a lot that is, if not word for word, very similar.
There's like, they make dinner the first night, and it's like a goose or something from their farm.
Mm-hmm.
And he forces the good wife to like eat meat, you know, when she's a vegetarian.
She's a vegetarian.
Yeah. I remember the movie being very, like, explicit about explaining that before that happens, but both this and the Rick, I was like, they don't really say she's a vegetarian beforehand. It would, like,
they do. They do in both. Yeah, so in both, when they are on vacation.
When they're in Italy.
Yeah. You know, they're eating dinner. In fact, in this one, I think it's I'm getting, like, the two mixed up. But in one of them, Patrick, Patty, the bad dad, he, like, says, oh, that's great. Like, that's wonderful. We should all take some inspiration from you helping the environment.
He does that in both.
And then, like, as soon as they arrive, they, like, make her eat this goose at their house.
There's a part where they go to a restaurant. I really love this. I actually love the whole restaurant part. Where, like, their daughter gets all ready to go with them, and then, like, some babysitter shows up. And they're like, oh, no,
it's funny.
The kids are staying here. It's like, okay. They go out, and the couple gets pretty sexual in the restaurant. They, like, start dancing, and like, very provocative, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they seem like young people in love. And our couple, like, the main good couple, is, like, get up and, like, awkwardly dance. They, like, can't really even dance at all, which would be me. And he sticks them with the bill. I fucking love that.
Yeah.
Like, you go to pay. He's like, yeah, you want me to help out? He's like, oh, would you? That's great. And he just fucking walks out.
When they invite them out, too.
It's like customary to be like, if you're the one inviting them out, you should pay. You know? I love all the little things like that, because, like, you could see that happening. Like, there's people that are fucking kind of like this, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
There is a part where the wife is taking a shower. I think that the husband comes in and takes a piss. Like, the bad husband comes in.
Yeah, and he brushes his teeth. Like, he's getting ready for bed. Like, and he's acting like it, you know, it is his house. Like, as far as we know, right? Like, that's where he lives. And so, like, he's just acting like nothing's different. Like having strange women in your shower is normal. And, like, you would just barge in and take a piss and brush your teeth and floss and do all your nightly routine.
There's people that will do. I'm telling you, I know people that would do shit like this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They find their daughter in bed with them one night. Like, the good couple finds the daughter in the bad couple's bed. And I think that's kind of the breaking point for the mom, where she's like, we need to get the fuck out of here, right?
Yep. Yep. She's like, she wakes up in the middle of the night and, like, goes to check on their daughter, who is sleeping in the son's room, the bad dad son's room, and she's not there. So she starts panicking and starts looking around, finds her in the bed with the other couple, who are naked. half naked, but...
it's, like, inappropriate, you know, it's, all around.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Just, like, we don't really know you, and you're gonna sleep with my, like, 10-12-year-old daughter half clothed. Like, we're not close like that, dude.
That's what I love. All these things, like, all these little touches I love about this. But this is it. They're like, we're getting the fuck out of here. They're driving, and they do this in the remake too. And I'm kind of leaving out lots of details about the remake, because we'll talk about it separately. But, like, they decide to go back for her bunny, like, her stuffed animal bunny, which I think, I know it's called Hoppy in the remake. I think in this one it has, like, a different name.
Ninus or Ninus.
Ninus, yeah, Ninus. My note here is the whole going back for the bunny thing.
Absolutely not.
That is when the dad needed to grow. Like, that is the moment where the dad needed to grow a pair of balls and stand up to his daughter. Like, if he just did that, they're scot-free. Like, you know, like
they get out. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, I don't know about you. I don't have kids, but I would be like, honey, we'll get you a new one. You know, we'll get you something at the next stop, whatever. Like, don't worry about it.
Especially how this, like, you know, you're leaving in the middle of the night, not awakening your host. Like, you think something's wrong with these people.
Yeah.
And you're willing to, like, sneak out in the middle of the night to just get the fuck away from them. And then you'd be like, all right, well, you know, let's turn around and go get the rabbit. No, fuck the rabbit, man. The rabbit is stuffed. We're not going back. Fuck those people. We're done.
Exactly, man. Like, and like, you're going to try to sneak back in and grab it and this and that. But it does set up, like, a good, like, you know, it of course gets caught trying to, like, grab the rabbit, and it's like kind of like this, what are you guys doing? Why are you leaving? I thought we were having a good time.
And in this one, it's even more infuriating in this one than it is in the remake.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this one, the fucking rabbit is in the car. It was under the seat.
I did notice, though, that, whatchamacallit, am I writing notes? Hold on. I thought the wife was way more direct. I think they were, like, way more direct about why they were leaving. They're like, yeah, you guys did this thing that made me uncomfortable.
Yep.
You made me eat meat. And in the remake, they're not as direct. I think they say that she had her period out.
Yes.
But well, go ahead.
That's how they try to leave the second time in the remake.
But here it's like they kind of like tell them, hey, like, you made us uncomfortable, like, you know, and
yeah,
they got answers for everything. Did they have that? Was it in the original that they're like, oh, we used to have a daughter? Because in the remake they say, like, we used to have a daughter, and so, like, you know, we miss her, and, like, you know, she was crying for you, and you weren't, like, I don't know what you guys are doing.
I do. They say something along those lines, and what you find out is, like, there's a dark reason why they had a daughter and don't have one anymore.
Yeah. But, like, in this one, I think the parents were supposedly fucking, like, the good parents were fucking while she was, like, looking for help or, you know, or
yeah, that's a major change in the remake.
But regardless, the result is the same. They stay and the fucking bullshit continues. I do kind of like the dads go out by themselves, and, like, it's kind of like a little therapy session where, like, it's in both movies too, when they're in the car, like, the bad dad plays this song that would be, like, kind of unexpected. Here's, like, this really beautiful song that I don't know, but he's just, like, singing it's along. Like
some Danish or Dutch song.
They go out, they, like, scream into the void, which, hey, I might try that sometime. I kind of love here where, again, I'm saving most of my thoughts on the remake till we get to the remake, but, like, I kind of love how the good dad talks about, like, how he's, like, kind of upset with his life, and he sees himself as just, like, this normal, boring guy. Like, I kind of like that.
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't know. It plays into kind of who that character is. I do think there are, like, some improvements in the remake, but we'll get to it. But eventually, like, I think the dad just kind of finds the shed on his own that reveals everything.
He stumbles onto, I don't even know why he's out there, like, but he stumbles on, like, a cabin, you know, behind the house.
And he
finds a serial killer trove.
Yeah, like, the evidence of all the families they've killed. And me, you know, like, realizes that their son is not their son, and that they are in very serious danger. And the other interesting thing is the son in this is he doesn't, like, speak. There is one point when he comes up to the dad while he's, like, outside by himself, and he, like, opens his mouth and shows that he doesn't have a tongue. You know, and we're about to find out why that is. I also think I passed over a scene that I think is like gonna be like a classic horror scene. Is there's a part where they make them perform a dance. They make the two kids perform a dance.
Yeah.
And the bad dad is like so abusive and kind of terrifying in the scene that he kind of like leaves like the other parents like shaking because they're just like, what the fuck is that? We'll talk about that more in the remake. But anyways, they realize they're really in fucking trouble now and they try to leave. But this time they're getting chased by the bad couple. Shit's going down. I think the dad gets out of his car, like the good dad gets out of his car at some point to like look for help.
Yeah.
He's gonna run off the road.
Yeah, that the car got stuck or broke down. Yeah. I don't know exactly what happened. He does mention like, oh, I think we're stuck.
I think they ran him off the road and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna go look for help. He finds a house, it's fucking empty, and it kinda occurs to me, I'm like, has this couple like killed everyone around them? Like in a 5 mile radius so they could just play their games.
Yeah.
But anyways, he goes back to his car and his family's gone and the bad dad shows up in his car and he's got the good dad's family. And the good dad, at this point, good dad knows what's going on. He gets in the car and he's like, please don't hurt us. We just want to go home. And it's like really sad. Like the parents, like at least the dad knows exactly what the fuck's going on at this point. I don't think he's really gotten to discuss it with his wife.
Well, he did not tell his wife. No.
Yeah. But he knows what's going on, but they're both like trying to comfort their daughter. Well, I think I forgot to mention too. I think they find their son, the bad couple's son drowned. Right.
Yeah, and that's when they decide to
in the shed. Yeah, in the shed.
Like he comes back and there's like a pool or a hot tub or something, and like Abel, the boy, is just upside, you know, not upside down, face down in the water,
floating. Yeah,
yeah, it's like and you know, the dad kind of puts to it, like he's already put that like, hey, these guys are fucking serial killers. That kid's not theirs. But then I think he realized, oh, we're fucking like next, and next is right fucking now.
Yeah. It's, dude, it's tough. This is a bleak movie. I remember it struck me like as they're like freaking out and asking questions, the bad mom keeps telling the good mom, be quiet. You need to be quiet. It's like, Jesus. They like make the good mom let go of her daughter. And I think it's, is this when the babysitter the one that drags her out? Like, they have this guy that they fired, I guess? I don't know.
Yes.
The bad dad beats the good dad. Like, he's, like, punching him. And the bad wife cuts out the daughter's tongue in front of them, and... Again, this is a movie that has like very little violence, but when it happens, like it's like, in my opinion, it's kind of like sickening. We're just like, this. I don't have a kid, but like I try to be empathetic and imagine how awful this would be. Like you failed your kid, you're watching your kid get, you know, fucking mutilated in front of you. Just, I don't know, it's like upsetting to me to even talk about. And then they like fucking, and the dad like starts puking as this is happening. They take him out, they make him strip their clothes, like the parents' clothes off, and they're like, why are you doing this? And the bad dad says, because you let me. Just a little, it sounds a little like the strangers, you know, why are you doing this? Because you were here.
This yeah, is a little I more, mean, it's a chilling line.
This is a little more pointed, though, because the movie is about them letting them. Like, yeah. They're just obedient the whole time.
And I don't know. I think this is where where I like all this is horrible, right? But like they never fight back.
Yes.
At all. And that's where like really kind of bothers me, because like, and I don't know how I would act in any of these situations, but like you've just watched your daughter get her tongue taken out. And like,
at that point I'm like, you're going to kill me. You're going to have to work for it.
Right. Like you're there in the, you know, in this quarry, and they're like, take off your clothes, and then they meekly do it. Like, no, man, I'm going to charge you. If you're going to kill me, like, but kill me to my face. Like, I'm going to go out fighting. Like,
yeah.
As opposed to standing at the bottom of a fucking quarry while you throw rocks at me.
So when this movie came out, it was generally like in the horror community, like regarded really well, like really highly. And I'm among that group, but there was a huge portion of the community that was like, dude, you try to come for my kids, I'm going to fucking kill you. Like,
yeah.
And so the people, there are even people that like generally liked the whole movie, but like this ending, it wasn't that the ending was bleak that they hated. They hated that the parents didn't fight back.
I find it unrealistic. Like,
yeah. I've always defended it, because I was like, dude, the whole point of the movie is that you let people push you around too much. Like, so it's like, it's in line with the thesis of the movie, is that like,
I understand
pushovers, yeah. You know, yeah. But like, yeah. At the same time, I have never faulted anyone for despising that aspect of it. Cause I'm like, yeah, at least I know me. Like I luckily don't have that part of my personality that will let people like tell me what to do. But like, I do have it to a point. I'm not going to let it like get to this point, but like, you know, I understand the need or the want to not make things uncomfortable. But once it gets to this, like, dude, I'm going to be like gouging your eyes.
Yeah. At some point you like just natural instinct takes over and you're going to fight or flight. Like,
yeah,
you don't just continue to stand there in shock. As this continues to happen, like, and then meekly take off your clothes.
But as a piece of art, I've always defended it as like, it's going for this thing that people are too compliant. Like, that's the point of the movie, is people are too compliant. And so I'm like, hey, they went for it. And then, you know, then it just ends on this bleak note where like the parents get stoned to death and just left there. And this couple has their kid, and that's the end of the movie. I don't know. I think it's super disturbing. I will let you speak your thoughts and give it a rating.
Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to kind of like,
separate yourself from,
like, yeah, because like, yeah,
you said you're not in a great mood right now and you're like distracted.
Yeah.
This is probably not the best type. And I don't know if this is in response to like the U.S. presidential election that just happened. But in my defense, I did not know how that was going to turn out when I picked these. I was hopeful.
Yeah. So yeah, I think if I was maybe in a better mood for, you know, I don't know, however, like maybe a different headspace, more accepting of it, I would have come away with a different opinion. I think it's, you know, fine. I think it's well made enough. I think that, you know, the acting is fine. It's kind of understated in a lot of cases, which yeah, works in bit. Its works in its favor, I think. Which I enjoy stuff in the remake. A yeah, little more too. Because it's a me little too. More boisterous, but this works in just kind of allowing it to have that shock value. I wish that the parents would have had any fight, that the good parents had any fight to them at all, because I think that would have helped me, even if they ended up dying. Like, even if, like, you know, even if that ending still kind of ends up with them being at the end, at the bottom of a quarry covered in rocks, if they had showed any fight, I think I would have been a little more positive on it. As it is, I think it's fine. I'm gonna end up at 6 out of 10 okay. for it. So,
ever since I've seen this movie, I've wanted you to see it, so I'm happy that they made a remake.
There you go.
So I had an excuse to get you to see it. But I've always wondered what your reaction would be to it. You know, your initial reaction, like, you know, like your review on like Letterboxd is like, I'm just not in the mood for something this bleak right now. So I wonder if you, again, yeah, if you were in a different place, like, to me, I think that like the fact that it's so bleak is part of what makes it special. Cause it's like, I think horror movies shouldn't always give you a hug at the end, you know, it should be.
Oh, sure. For sure.
Yeah. You know? But I always had wondered since the moment I saw this movie, how you would react to the end because of the parents not fighting back. I was like, is he going to be in the camp of like, they don't do anything, what the fuck? Or is he going to, you know, be like, no, yeah, it's kind of in line with what the movie is saying. I guess I have my answer now and I get it. And I'm like, honestly, I've never held that criticism like against people who have it. I'm like, yeah, I get it. I get why you would say that. Cause like, and so, cause for me, I'm a fighter. If I get pushed, I'm going to fight.
Yeah. Well, even the meekest of people, right? Like
at some point have some fight.
Yeah. Yeah. Like there's a line that I have friends that are like very non-confrontational and like, there's been times when you just like, you see somebody push them too far and they snap, like they go off and, you know, I don't, what's the line for these people that
exactly. Like meanwhile, me, I fucking snapped on my boss this morning for like almost no reason. Cause I'm just so pissed off about the state of our, work, like our business. And so like, I'm like in the middle, like I kind of like let things slide a lot, but like if I think it's something that's worth standing up for, I'm going to fucking fight you. And obviously, if someone was coming after someone I loved, I will fucking kill you. Like straight up.
Like I think we watched some bleak shit in the past where I don't know if it always works out for was it Eden Lake? Is that one of them? Like,
it's a movie that I think about when I watch this is Eden Lake. I think about that movie.
But like, at least you see like the victims there are.
They're fighting the whole time.
Yeah, they're trying to fight back. And it's like, I get this is a very weird, uncomfortable situation. But once you know you're in mortal danger and like once you see your child be, you know, mutilated like that, you would think there would be something more than just like the meekness that they put on. It fits for the message that the filmmakers are going for.
Yeah.
Can't fault that. It's just that to me, I just found it a little bit unrealistic.
I hear you. I don't really have a comeback to people's complaints on that other than like, it's the message of the movie. And I kind of applaud the filmmakers here for sticking to their guns. And even if I had that quibble with it, I still think this is like a pretty incredible idea for a movie. And I like, for me personally, I think this is one of the best recent horror movies. Like the last few years, this really stands out to me. It's like a 9 out of 10 for me. Like, I think it's really, really great.
Nice. I mean, premise alone, it is a terrifying premise, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah.
One, I'm not sure if I would take anybody up on the offer to go to their house after having spent like 3 or 4 days with them.
After seeing this movie.
No, no.
I'm not making any friends anymore on vacation.
What's also fascinating, and what we get into it with the remake, is because they change a few things in how the couple itself is presented. But one of the things that they change here is so that, you know, they get this postcard from the family from the bad dad and bad mom, the serial killers, they get this postcard inviting them to come to the Netherlands and see them. But like this couple has like they have friends at home, so like somebody's gonna miss them. And that is something they change in the remake, where the family that is victimized in the remake doesn't have anybody to fall back on. Like, they're Americans in a foreign land, working in another foreign country.
Yes.
There are no close friends. There are no family that is going to miss them immediately.
And this would make them closer. Like, it's not as big of a.
Right.
Well, yeah. You know, like, let's get into the remake. This was directed by James Watkins, who I don't know what he's done. Let's see if he's done anything. The Descent Part 2.
That one's fine, I guess.
Oh, he did a little movie called Eden Lake. So
what a coincidence.
I could see you. I did not know that until right now. Because Eden Lake starts with this uncomfortable manners thing, right?
Yeah.
And it goes crazy. So I can see why they would choose him for this. He did the screenplay, obviously based on the original. Very based on the original. Like,
I want a toast to Italy, of course. To the food, of course. And to love.
Salute.
Dear Louise, Björn, and Agnes, how are you? We were just talking the other day how nice it was spending time with you this summer. We would love to invite you to come to visit us.
Yeah, you made it!
Sorry for the mess. It's gonna get much worse. Come on!
Woo-hoo! Whoa! Yeah!
He's been cooking all day. He's making wild boar.
This is for you.
I'm a vegetarian.
I insist. I insist.
Hi, Abel.
Abel has some difficulty speaking. He has what you call congenital aglossia, meaning basically he's born without a tongue.
Abel, I've got this.
Hey, Abel! He's only a child, for Christ's sake.
You can't talk to him that way. What is wrong with you?
We have a situation here. Someone left without saying goodbye.
So many things have felt so wrong.
Because we do things differently.
No one's forcing you to stay, but I really hope you do, because today is gonna be a great day.
So this movie plays out very much like the original, for at least the first two acts. So there's not a ton to say about it. Like, it's just carbon copying. But what you do have here. So you have James McAvoy as the bad dad, and he is having the time of his life playing this role. Like, he is having so much fucking fun, and he's like a really magnetic personality in this, even more than the original, right? Mackenzie Davis as the good mom. You have Scoot McNairy as the good dad. I think he's really incredible in this too. A lot of this movie, like, even though it's carbon copying it, it's kind of like Let Me In, where I'm just like, yeah, like, it's doing the same thing, but it's just so well done that, like, I'm having a good time.
Yeah.
It's way more pointless than Let Me In, because, like, the original movie is, like, 90% in English to begin with. Like, you know what I mean? It's
there's a couple moments where they're speaking Dutch or whatever in the original, but the majority of it is in English.
So this ranks up there as one of the most pointless remakes of all time. Because again, yeah, the point of doing an American remake is so you get the American audiences who won't watch subtitles, right?
Oh, and I understand what you're saying. It's pointless, but I think the box office for this shows that like there was a point, right? Like it wasn't like, oh, it also only did 300,000. It made like almost $80 million.
Yeah, I should mention that budget of $15 million, so much bigger budget this time, but also did a huge box out. Oh, you know, it did 76-77 million.
Very, very good box.
Pretty good.
Not like massive.
Pretty good return. Yeah.
Like it made its money, and so I could see why Blumhouse kind of like invested in this.
No, I get it. It's just like it is like cynical and kind of like I don't know. There's something about it. I'm like, why? Like, you know, like it doesn't like if unless you have something to say that's different or like something you're gonna do that's different. I don't get the point of it, except for like. Obviously, one, make money. Two, it does kind of like veer at the end. But there are a few things in the first two thirds of this that they change. And I think are actually pretty good. Besides just like, I think the cast is really great in this remake. There's a whole element of like, They're the good couple. Their marriage is a little fraught because he discovered that his wife was like sexting like a coworker or something like that, right?
Yeah, or a coworker sexted her. I don't even know if she
sent her. It seemed to me like there was like, I mean, if you're at the point where you're getting dick sent, something's going on. There's, you know, some flirtation probably happening, right? And I thought that was interesting. I thought it added like a layer to it. I don't know. Like, what do you think?
Yeah. Well, it. And so in the original, you don't have that. Like, it, you know, you kind of get this little thing where the dad is kind of like unsatisfied.
Yes.
But there isn't this tension between the two of them. He's just like, he's just going through the motions. That's he's unsatisfied. He's,
he seems like a cuck in the original a little bit, but it's not that his wife, they, none of this, like, this is all new material in this. And I thought it was like pretty well done. And yeah, like when they go out and they're little, like, we're going to scream into the void thing, like their therapy session there is him talking about like, hey man, like it's cool. Like she loves you. Right. Like blah, blah, blah. Right.
Yeah.
I appreciated this element being added.
Yeah, it puts that rift between the husband and wife, and it so when
and he's emasculated.
Yeah, and the wife is like more kind of like on the ball with this. Like she is questioning things. She is asking him like, hey, like you know, it was fucking weird that like he made me eat meat. The dad is like, ah, it's nothing. Like, and you can see why, because he has this animosity towards her that he's like hasn't forgiven her for what has happened. So there's a rift between them where they don't necessarily fully trust each other. And so when she's bringing up objections, he's dismissing them outright, which is putting them in more danger.
Yeah. I agree to all that. The other thing, I think there's like, one other thing in the first two thirds of the movie that's different, and I don't like it, and that is how much the son, the bad couple's son, quote unquote son, not their son, like signals what's going on. It's too telegraphing what's going to happen.
But also like they're fucking stupid. like Louise and Ben are just like not getting it because they're so wrapped up in themselves.
Yeah, but like, we're not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. I think as a kid too, like you might be scared, but like, hey, there's these people that like these psychopaths over here are not my parents. But these people who they're leaving me alone with in certain instances, wouldn't I try to communicate with them that, hey, these are crazy motherfuckers that killed my parents. Like, it was believable to me that he would try to do that. Like, some of it gets a little out of hand where he steals the keys. And
I think it's believable both ways. I think it works. I think it's just too, like, telling you what's happening, where it's like, in the original, it's like, you're like, yeah, something's off here. Like, you're like, something's off here. And then, like, it all hits you at once. And then, like, you get sent into that bleak ending.
Where this is just like, hey, something is wrong here. It's like, look at the kid. Yeah,
yes, it's like hitting you over the head with it. Like, I do appreciate the kid trying, but also I think it's believable in the original that the kid would be so beaten down and abused and scared that he would do nothing. Like, you know, I find that believable. Again, it just feels so Americanized to me, where it's just like, we have to have like this adventure aspect of it. Like, the kid is trying to solve it. Like,
it worked a little bit better just like having something to like cling to.
Like, someone's trying to do something. Yeah.
Like, oh, and I watched this one first too. So it was just like, whatever. Like, I'm not so really interesting surprised by this. So.
It's so interesting that you watched the first, and I was like, maybe he'll do that, because like I would love to hear the thoughts of someone who watched this one first.
So before you suggested this, like, I did want to see, and I didn't know it was a remake until I did not, and so that's another reason why, like, I think like an Americanized version of this, like, I'm pretty in with horror, but like maybe not. Like, not certain types of horror, and like, this isn't something that I would normally seek out, so it's not mm-hmm. in the realm of where I would, you know, follow things. But like, hey, like, James McAvoy's in a fucking horror film. Like, I like McAvoy, and they're putting him on TV or in, you know, on trailers on TV or YouTube videos, or I'm in a theater and they're popping him up there. Like, now I'm interested. I didn't know about this like film that, you know, was a Shudder original.
I told you about this movie.
I'm sure you did. And like, it's another thing that, like, I probably have it in a notebook saying, like, Jeff told me to watch Speak No Evil.
Yeah.
And it's probably on a list that I have of things that like you and other people have suggested. It's just, it did not trigger.
It's so funny.
So like, I saw this and didn't realize it was a remake until you had brought it up again, that like, hey, we're going to watch these two movies. So, watching it, you know, watching this one first, you know, kid, it was like, it didn't bother me because I hadn't seen the original.
Yeah,
how that was working.
I if I watched this movie first, again, I can't, it's hard, like, impossible for me to put myself in that situation. Yeah. I would be like, this is great. Like, this is like very entertaining and disturbing, and it's this very solid horror movie, but, part of the problem is, like, for me, having seen the original, like, even if they stuck the landing, which I don't think they do here, but like, even if they had stuck the landing, it's like, dude, you're borrowing like 70, I don't know, I'd say like maybe 90% of this is like just straight copying what someone else came up with, which is like,
yeah. I mean, there's a lot that is very, very, like, you know, note for note. I think the performances and some things they do, like the dinner, right? Like in this one where they go out to dinner.
That's a difference. Yeah, that's a difference I should touch on.
Go ahead. Where the bad mom, like, oh, we like to role play, and like she like pretends that she's like giving him a blowjob under the table, and like,
he presents too. He's like, oh,
yeah, yeah. And like the other two are like, this is fucking weird and uncomfortable. Like, it's like that. I thought that played like really well. And actually, I thought it worked a little bit better than the original dinner.
Really?
Scene.
Okay.
Just because like it was so outlandish.
I think that's why it's kind of bad. I think it's kind of like, it's so over the top that I'm just like, come on, man. Like, when I watched it, like, my main note was like, oh, this is new, right? Like, I don't remember this. And then when I'm watching the remake, I'm like, oh, it's way more subtle. Or when I'm watching the original, I'm like, it's way more subtle than the original. Like, it's the same point, but without being like so outlandish. Like it's just like, it's but then so like, crazy.
The original has the outlandishness of like of that car ride. Like that's not really doesn't play the same way here, right? Like they have that car ride where they're turning up the music real loud in the original, and you know they're kind of screwing, like turn the music down. Like it's I don't think that happens in this one to the same degree.
They do have the other car ride with the dads though, when he sings.
Yeah,
is that yeah. Bernie?
Yeah, have Wilson Phillips playing
really, really great.
Funny scene, yeah.
Yeah, and then you get like the therapy scene's a little different because it's talking about you know.
Well, and there's a weird. It's is there. In the original, I don't think there is like where the bad dad takes the good dad out hunting. That doesn't happen. And
it's original, the same right? scene here, but it's like they don't do the hunting. It's just.
But it's yeah, just... it's like it's almost like Patty, James McAvoy's character is testing the good dad. Like, can you kill something? Like,
and he's telling him like. You know what I love is the hunt, and mm-hmm. what the whole movie is the hunt.
The hunt. That's, like he's been playing with them the entire time.
So like the remake is not without merit, and I actually like will come out right and say like I think the remake is pretty fucking entertaining. And
yeah,
where it turns and where it changes is after the dance routine that they make the kids do, which here they have them doing it to Cotton Eye Joe, which I love. I don't love that song. I just love that they have them doing it to that song. And then it becomes like this whole, like, you know, the kid with his tongue cut out, like the son is like trying to steal the keys from the dad and show them what's going on. They get to see what's going on, like in the shed. And it's like, holy fucking shit. And then it turns into crazy, like, cat and mouse, like, between the parents in the house. And I actually found this to be, like, very entertaining and very awesome.
It mostly works. Like,
yeah.
It's a fun, like, home. It's, I mean, it's not their home, like, but they're in it. And, like, it's kind of like a home invasion because they lock the two killers outside. And then kind of like have to fortify inside. Like it's a fun twist on it.
And, you know, to its credit, like what I said on like Letterboxd on Twitter, I stand by like this fixes the problems with the original. I put that in quotes because I don't know if I necessarily consider it a problem.
Right.
But like, I get it. I get why people want them to fight back and they do here. And it turns into this extended third act. That's like a lot of action and it's very entertaining. Part he makes him get up on a ladder at some point.
Oh yeah, before they leave, like because they don't go, they're trying to leave and the tires are flat on the car, and this is very fascinating because like they have to make choices. Like there's consistently choices here, and this is where the choices aren't like I'm uncomfortable like in the original. It starts being more and more devious. Like
yeah.
Oh well, your tires are flat, so like you can't leave. We'll be good. Oh, you can't leave because like the bunny. You need the bunny. Where's the bunny? Oh look, the bunny's up on the roof. How? Well, that's weird. How'd that get up there? And, like, go. How about you climb up the roof? So it's like this tense scene of like, is he gonna pull the fucking ladder out from underneath them? Like, what's gonna happen here? And then even there, it's like, all right, well. Aunt, go, like, they're trying to help the kids still at that point. And, like, Aunt, go open the gate. And he's like, no need. So he pulls the kid close and opens the gate. And then they start to drive away. And he throws the fucking kid into the lake.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and the kid can't swim.
Making sure they could see it. Yeah.
It's yeah. Like, and it's like,
this kid
you have this choice. Like, you could leave right now. And, like, that kid dies, but you live. But like you have to live with that yourself, and then the dad's like motherfucker, and like
yeah,
like hops out, saves the kid. Like it's a little outlandish, but it's well, you know it's satisfying, and that you would think that I don't know. I honestly, again, I don't know what choice I would make in that moment.
I was about to ask you. I think I'm driving.
Yeah, I think I might.
Sorry, I don't know this kid.
The kid's probably dead anyway. And if we go back, we're also dead. I don't know, but maybe in that moment, like, you just have that. Fuck, gotta try and save him, and he doesn't.
I think you're driving away.
I think so too, but like, yeah. you want to think you'll be the hero.
You want to think you're a good person. You want to think you're a good person, but like, at the end of the day, people, you know, want to protect their tribe, and it's like, yeah, we're getting the fuck out of here. I have no actually problems with that though. I think that was really cool. Like, and it plays off the drowning from the original. Like, you know, hey, we're gonna show him throwing him in there. But I liked about this third act, like, I appreciate that they, like, changed this so that, like, hey, it's exciting, it is very Americanized, they're fighting back, but I had no problems with it. And in fact, like, I also love they kept some of the bleakness of it, because, like, there's a part where the family gets, like, squared off in a room, and, like, you know, the other family's trying to come after them, and the dad, Scoot McNairy, is just like, I'm so sorry, like I don't know what to do, like, we're fucked. And like that desperation, like that, like reaching the end of your rope, or reaching a dead end and you're like fucked, is like, I think, pretty well conveyed. Did you catch that in this, or were you like,
yeah
I thought, like, I really felt it. Like, horror movies don't often, like, lay out, like, how terrible the stakes are for people. And I think they did, obviously they're aping off the original, because, like, the original definitely lays out how bad the stakes are for them. But, like, here, like, they, like, retained that, where he's just like, dude, I think we're gonna die, and I'm so, so sorry. Like, I'm sorry I failed you guys. And I thought that, like, really worked.
Yeah.
But then the ending happens, and we get the Hollywood ending. Like,
yeah, and like this is where I ultimately like this film quite a bit.
I do too.
I think that they get down from the roof, right? They're about to escape, and Patty, James McAvoy, like, is holding the daughter at gunpoint, and this is where I'm like, this is stupid, because She pockets the syringe of ketamine that they're going to use to, like, numb her so they can cut her tongue out.
Yeah.
And she's been holding it this entire time that they've been chased through the house, been, you know, fucking tortured. Like, she's holding on to this thing the entire time, and she stabs. She has the wherewithal to be like, and now I'm going to stab this motherfucker. Stabs him. I don't remember exactly where she, but she stabs him with the needle, injects him, and then, like, the ketamine takes it. And it's, oh, this is so stupid. It's the one part where I was like, this is dumb. Like, everything else really worked except for this one.
I didn't even think of that.
Tiny moment.
I didn't even think of that. I was just already, like, mad about, like, oh, they're gonna somehow get out of this.
They're gonna live.
Like, try to put yourself in the shoes of someone who saw the original. Like where you're just like, this is supposed to be like an exercise in, like, there's no hope. And here, like, and then, like, I think
appreciated that there was hope.
Yeah, I hear you. But and then, like, I think the aunt comes in with a rock and, like, crushes the dad's head, right?
Yeah, that's pretty goofy too, but I get it. I understand. I would
do it. Even as an 8-year-old kid or whatever, I'd fucking do it. And then, like, the end is, like, just them driving off. Like, they even have the other kid, and, like, they saved him, and it was like, I don't know. For me, it was like, again, trying to comfort you when the world is not comforting, like, and
sure,
I think that's fine 95% of the time. Like, Get Out has, like, an ending where it's like, oh, the cops show up and this, but it's fine. Like, and that's regarded as one of the best horror films of the last decade, right?
Right.
But to me, it's like, because we have this original text, it's like, well, you're kind of, like, betraying what the original was about a little bit. a lot.
Yeah, but I appreciate that they are two separate films. Like, because
they are, right? Because the whole action-packed third act, I'm so conflicted about this, because, like, I find the action-packed third act to be very, very fun.
It's fun. It's a good time.
But
they still could have been like, we're going to make this bleak and, like, we're going to kill the daughter in front of you. And, like,
I think you split the difference. You have the parents, like, you mentioned this in the first movie, like, you have the parents fight back and they fail.
Right. You could still do that. I think that, like, I'm sure that the producers or whoever here was like, you know,
no,
we're not going to do that. Like,
they probably got them $10 million extra dollars somehow or whatever. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm sure. And, like,
people don't want to see what the original was. People don't.
Yeah, they're like, we're spending $15 million on this, and if we murder we kill the parents in this, and the bad guys get away with it, and our last shot is like them on another holiday with the new daughter. I mean, people are like, we may hit. You know, we may make some money. We may make 20, 25 million, but we're not making 75 million. Like,
yeah,
it might be the difference in the box office.
You might be right. It might be that big of a difference. Because people would, if you put that original one in theaters, people would come out being like, bad time, like fucking and unrealistic, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So it might have made a difference. I don't know, but, there we are.
I'm glad that they both exist. Like, somebody asked me on Blue Sky or on Threads or somewhere when I posted my like little mini review that like I did not have a good time with the original, and they were like, "Oh, well, does the remake like justify itself?" I'm like, "Yeah, like these are two separate films, and I'm happy they both exist. Like, would I ever watch the original again? No, I don't think so."
I probably wouldn't have either, except for I gotta be honest, man. Like, I don't get like flustered much by horror, but like the original one, like, really kind of upsets
it's
me.
So grim and and bleak, and it's like there are movies that are grim and bleak that I can rewatch because like there's a fun aspect to them. That original movie
it's so sad what happens.
Like, there's no fun in it. It is just like, oh, this is miserable. Even if it's well executed, it's well executed miserableness. And this is fun. Like, at the end of the day, like, it is bleak. It is grim through like 2/3 of it.
It's giving you most of the ride of the original, but you get to get off. You get to get off the ride at the
end. Yeah, I can get off and go. All right, yeah,
that was scary. Yeah,
the world doesn't completely suck. I appreciate that they both exist separately and it's not just a shot for shot full on remake of the original.
It's close for a while. Yeah. All right. I guess I'll give you the final.
Yeah. I mean, I watched them backwards. Like, as I said, so I came in different way and I, you know, talked about it. Like I think that this, you described it really well. It's a roller coaster ride at the end, and you're allowed to get off of the horror ride and like feel okay about life. And like right now, maybe there's not a lot to feel all right.
There's definitely not.
So I appreciated being able to get off this ride. And, you know, even for us, like we watch a ton of horror. Some of it is really grim and dark and bleak. But sometimes like you don't want it to always be that way. And then this one clicked for me in that way. And it's just fun. Like James McAvoy is fucking phenomenal in this.
He's so good.
Just to watch his performance by itself was just like that. That was worth it alone. Like he is a super villain.
It's like he's on uppers or something.
Yeah.
You know, it is wild.
Absolutely loved him in this though.
Score?
I'm gonna go 8 out of 10. I really, really liked it.
I actually really enjoyed this too, but it's like compromised by what the Americanization things they did. there's two things. It's signaling too much with the kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the, like, again, if this is the only movie that existed, if this wasn't a remake, it's actually three things. If this wasn't a remake, I would, like, be like, this is a fucking awesome horror movie. This is, like, amazing. But I know what it's supposed to be, and I just can't square that. Or I'm just like, you guys pushed out it. You pushed out at the end.
That's fair.
I forgot what the third thing was, but whatever. It is, like, to me, because it, like, pushes out, it's like a 7.5. But, like, I would recommend, like, again, if someone asked me which one to watch, I would say watch the original. I'd kind of say watch them both. Like, I think they're both, like, it's weird because of how much this is copying. But yeah. Still, I think like, they're both, regardless, it's such a fun premise that turns so dark. I kind of hats off to both of them a little bit, but, like, I do think that they backed off at the end here and just sure. went with the safe path. Anyways, Chris, that's I guess we disagree on this one. I did not do a poll. Fuck it, we'll leave it as it stands.
All right,
I'm saying the original. You're saying the remake. What's up next month?
So it's Christmas time.
Yes.
So I picked out a pair of Christmas horror-y films, both from 2015. One is called A Christmas Horror Story.
Oh yeah.
And the other is 2015's Krampus, which I have not seen. It has
the American Krampus.
Yeah, the American Krampus with Adam Scott, the guy from.
I thought you had seen. I thought you liked that.
No, you haven't seen it? Maybe I have. I don't know. I've forgotten then. Like, if I have,
okay. All
right. But I was like, you know, and American, A Christmas Horror Story is the other one. Both are from 2015. Krampus is available on Hulu and Max. And there are multiple Krampus movies, so if you're watching along with us, it is the one with Adam Scott.
Yeah,
Who is in? He's in what's that show on Apple that he's on?
Severance.
Yeah, Severance, and he was in Parks and Rec and some other stuff. So that is on Max and Hulu. And A Christmas Horror Story, which also it features Krampus fighting Santa Claus.
That's not what I was thinking of. What the fuck was I thinking of? It's like a young boy. It's like kind of like Home Alone.
Oh, you made us watch that one, didn't you?
I don't think so. It's like a Danish.
Oh no! I know
it's like,
I know
it's like called like a Christmas. Yeah. It's like A Christmas Story, or
yeah. This stars William Shatner.
oh boy!
And it is if you are looking for it free, it is on Philo. I'm not sure what the fuck that is. And it's also on Sling TV for free.
You said Krampus is on what?
Krampus is on Max and Hulu.
All right.
So Krampus probably a little bit easier to find. I mean, these aren't, you know, if you have to go and rent A Christmas Horror Story, it's like $2.99, $3.99 somewhere. But
all right.
Yeah, these are both both involve Krampus. Both are from 2015. One has zombie elves though, and William Shatner.
I am a huge fan of Christmas horror, so I'm looking forward to this.
You're not a Krampus guy though, right? Like,
I'm not. I think I've seen this Krampus, and I did not like it. So we'll see.
There are a bunch of Krampus movies, so they don't all work out.
I think I've seen this big one, and I did not like it, but...
Rare Exports, I believe, is the movie
we're thinking of. I think so.
That's the Swedish or Finnish movie. Finnish. With Santa Claus and his tomb.
There's also like a Christmas horror movie that came out like a year or two ago where I think it's called like There's Something in the Barn, or I can't remember the name of it. Have you heard of this?
No, but I kind of want to.
It is like they discovered that there's like Christmas, like Santa gnomes. It's like critters.
Oh, I'm in. I got yes. Oh, I love.
Is it called There's Something?
There's Something in the Barn. Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, There's Something in the Barn, and the artwork is fucking phenomenal. It's like an elf, like a little gnome type elf holding a saw. It's great.
I have not seen it yet, but
it's probably bad. But
yeah,
it's about the same as a Christmas Horror Story.
I love Christmas tinged horror. It's part of why I love Terrifier 3. So,
yeah,
I'm excited for it.
Wonder what holiday they'll do for Terrifier 4.
Do another 4th of July. We don't have enough of those.
4th of July would be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then maybe because they want to do two more Terrifiers, right? So,
yeah.
Maybe do 4th of July. And then for the final one, do Easter. Just go full on like sacrilegious.
So you have one to watch.
Yeah,
watch for each
It would be great. Even if like I find them just okay, but the having them be holiday themed is neat.
They're just okay, but they have so many elements working for them that are like awesome. So.
So next month we'll be watching Christmas Horror Story and Krampus, both from 2015. I may throw in There's Something in the Barn to watch as well.
And we'll try to get back a little sooner to get back on track, so it's not 2 months.
Yeah, because inevitably January is going to be delayed just because of the way the year works. Yeah. So. We'll try. We will definitely
we'll
get in. Try.
We'll have it out well before Christmas. So.
Definitely before Christmas.
Merry Christmas, guys. Enjoy. I hope you enjoyed listening about the worst shit ever tonight. So, all right. That's it. We'll be back next month soon.
Yep.